ladies and gentlemen. First case for argument is Wiesmuller v. Kosabuki. Mr. Wiesmuller.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm attorney Christopher Wiesmuller, representing Corinne Wiesmuller and Heather Devon, plaintiffs and appellants, and on behalf of a certified class. The claim in this case is that the Wisconsin diploma privilege and the imposition of the Wisconsin bar exam on out-of-state law school graduates discriminates against interstate commerce. In the district court, there were two claims, the first being for facial discrimination and the second being for effectual discrimination.
Mr. Wiesmuller, I have two questions for you. One of them is why this is really your claim, because I can see that out-of-state law schools as producers of lawyers, manufacturers of lawyers or whatever you want to say, are being treated differently from in-state law schools. But it's very difficult for me to see at the individual level how residents of one state are treated differently. So that's my first question. My second question is really just one of interest on my part. I think it surprising that you assume that the way the state would choose to stop discriminating is to extend the diploma privilege to everyone, because it seems to me far more likely that the state would just say, fine, let's just go into the bar exam business, which is what virtually every other state has done. So if you could address those, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. As to the first question, I think that the law students, the recent law school graduates, really bear the brunt of the burden. The reason being they're the ones that actually suffer the financial consequences of having to take a bar exam. They're the ones that pay the higher fees. They're the ones that have to wait longer to be admitted. So I think there's a true injury in fact to the student or the recent graduate.
But if they don't want that burden, they can either go to a Wisconsin law school or actually now it turns out even without reciprocity, they could become admitted in another state and simply be admitted by motion in Wisconsin.
Well, I understand that. Part of the issue there is that then the burden shifts. The gatekeepers become Marquette and UW. Certainly, there's an issue there because if I choose to go to law school in Oklahoma, which I did, I shouldn't have to make the consideration of, okay, am I getting discriminated against on the back end? I think that I understand your point. The problem is that even at the admissions level, I think that the applicants to law schools are considering whether or not they'll have to take a bar exam. So I do understand your point. I think that the discrimination flows through, though, even to that level, because it does become a factor at the point of the application. So I think that what happens, or the best way to describe it.
But who exactly is being discriminated against?
Well, I believe it is both the law schools and the law graduates. The law graduates seem to be the ones specifically discriminated against because of where their credentials come from, or you could say where they were produced, so to speak.
If you wanted to practice in Wisconsin, you could go to the law school there. They do admit out-of-state people, don't they?
They do, but the issue is not...
Well, it's not discrimination against non-residents of Wisconsin.
Right. The issue isn't residency.
So who is being discriminated against?
Well, I think that I can concede that the basis of the discrimination is where the law school is.
No. Who are the victims here?
Well, I think that the victims end up being the graduates when they apply to the Wisconsin bar. I think that the schools are discriminated against, but the ultimate victims are the individual applicant.
Looking at those individuals for a moment, if we were to grant the relief you request and strike the words in the state, how do we know that any of the members of the plaintiff's class could, in fact, say that they had taken all of the courses that are required under the rule? I mean, there's no allegation in the complaint that you have anybody in the class who would qualify under the rule for admission by motion.
Well, I think that if you look at, it would be docket number 22, my affidavit in the district court, paragraph 16 and subsequent, it discusses that after your first year of law school in any other state, you can transfer into Marquette or UW and still qualify for the diploma privilege. And if you look at the rule, basically the first 30 credits of those curriculum requirements would have to be met under those circumstances at the out-of-state law school. So I think there is a basis to believe that out-of-state law school course requirements can qualify under the diploma privilege. Part of the problem is that there's no actual basis for determining how the Wisconsin Board of Bar Examiners or the Wisconsin Supreme Court would actually handle those applicants in practice, because this bar is there at the beginning because they didn't graduate from a law school in the state.
Let's return to Judge Wood's earlier inquiry for just a moment. Suppose you were successful in convincing us that there was a discriminatory impact on interstate commerce. What would prevent the authorities in Wisconsin from simply saying that, well, in that case, we'll simply require everyone to take the bar examination? Would that be an acceptable result for you?
Well, the answer is, as to this claim, yes, it would end the discrimination. However, I don't feel that that's necessarily what the Wisconsin Supreme Court would do, given the way that the Supreme Court has held fast to the diploma privilege. There have been several statements made by the Wisconsin Supreme Court members that seem to indicate that they hold fast to the diploma privilege, that they think the diploma privilege is a good thing, and that bar exams are burdens. Under those circumstances, it's possible that they could make everyone take a bar exam. It would be my hope that they wouldn't. I don't think that they have to. There are several other things that they can do other than make everybody take the bar exam. So I see my white light is on. If there's any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Weisman. Ms. Lattice?
May it please the Court, I'm Jennifer Lattice, representing the individual members of the Wisconsin Board of Bar Examiners and the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
I'm very disappointed with the party's development of evidence as to the Wisconsin law content of the legal education at Marquette or Madison.
The case was dismissed on motions, Your Honor, and so there wasn't an opportunity for a hearing on that issue. So that's why there's no development of evidence on that point.
I don't understand you.
The case was resolved on a motion to dismiss, and so there was never any submission of evidence on any point, including that one.
Well, maybe,
but your briefs
problem.
Argue about it. I don't understand you. Well, there are affidavits somewhere, you know. From
there are indeed. There is one affidavit from a professor who taught at Marquette Law School in the 70s who indicated that 20% of his criminal procedure cost case did.
What bothers me about it is it would be the simplest thing in the world just to list the case books or other teaching materials in these law schools to see whether there's any Wisconsin content at all, which I doubt, actually.
Well, that is incorrect.
I mean, surely these professors use the standard case books, right? And the standard case books are national. Are there any Wisconsin case books?
There are much of Wisconsin's unique law is taught in the Wisconsin law schools. Our unique law related to contributory negligence, our unique law related to property, to marital property, our unique law related to criminal procedure. These things are a component of the courses taught at the school.
What does that mean, a component? In a course on contracts, what are the teaching materials that the professors use? Don't they use a standard case book?
Well, not at the University of Wisconsin, which I can speak to on personal experience. No, they use individual materials that they've developed for the contracts program at that school.
Well,
I am not familiar with what Marquette
does. At Madison?
They use case books in many courses, but not in that one.
But not what?
But not in contracts.
Not in contract.
That is correct, at least from my personal experience.
There's some distinctive Wisconsin law of contracts that they teach?
I think it's a, in the case of contracts, it goes more to a distinctive Wisconsin method of teaching contract law.
Well, that's unrelated to the content of the law.
That's correct.
My question is, what is the actual Wisconsin law content of the curricula in these law schools?
And what I'm saying is that the court does require that there be a Wisconsin law content through its rule, and each time that a student graduates, the dean has to certify that the individual student has completed a coursework that meets with the court's requirements.
So there's actually a piece of paper that the dean signs and submits to the bar authorities in Wisconsin or to the Chief Justice of Wisconsin or somebody that says John Smith has completed a course that includes Wisconsin content?
There is a piece of paper that the dean submits saying that John Smith has completed a course at law school that complies with the Supreme Court rule, which requires and includes the study of rules and principles of substantive and procedural law as they may arise in the courts and administrative agencies
as
of the United States and Wisconsin.
As they may arise in the courts.
That's correct.
So there's no actual requirement for substantive Wisconsin law to be taught as opposed to the methodology and the approach that would be applicable to learn the Wisconsin law. Is that right?
I think that is correct, Your Honor.
And how does that differentiate then those law schools from any other national law school?
It differentiates in that the Wisconsin Supreme Court has established that or has through its long-time familiarity with the schools, has indicated that it has confidence and is comfortable in the quality produced.
This is complete fiction.
That's keeping the guild small.
Not keeping the guild small because we provide another method for out-of-state students to come in, and that is through the taking of the bar exam.
I suppose, as a hypothesis, that the education a student receives in Madison or in Marquette is the same that they would receive in an out-of-state law school, then wouldn't your rule admitting these students without a bar exam, wouldn't that be completely arbitrary? Forget about the Commerce Clause. Wouldn't it be just utterly arbitrary denial of equal protection?
It isn't an arbitrary denial of equal protection because it is a method that the Supreme Court or that the Wisconsin.
I don't believe you. I don't believe that the content of a Wisconsin legal education is any different from the content of an Indiana or an Illinois.
But
Illinois is a larger state. More cases in a casebook are going to come from Illinois than from Wisconsin on average.
But oughtn't the Wisconsin Supreme Court be able to make that choice for its bar admissions?
Well, as Judge Ripple's question revealed, this requirement of certification is extremely vague, and it could easily be interpreted to mean, I'm sure it does mean, that the Supreme Court wants to make sure that a student in Wisconsin is learning, the basics about consideration and negligence and all this, because these are the type of issues that arise in Wisconsin laws that arises in all law. And you could require the same certification of an out-of-state law school dean, that the dean would certify that his school's program was a standard program. It wasn't like, it wasn't some weird experimental law school that didn't teach any substantive procedural law, right?
It is true that an out-of-state law school could potentially request certification. Nobody's tried that. Nobody's litigated the question, so we don't know the answer.
But the rule on its face prevents that.
The rule on its face indicates that the privilege is extended to the law schools in this state, but it's a Supreme Court rule. It's not a matter of legislation. So the Supreme Court could readjust
its... If I recall in the briefs, you say it is a matter of... It is the same as legislation.
It is not the same as legislation, meaning that the Supreme Court itself could choose to change its rule at any time.
But as Judge Ripple points out, right now, an out-of-state law school would functionally be just bringing the same lawsuit that Mr. Weissmuller has brought. It's just in its own right. I mean, I think the thing that's bothering all of us is the totally fictional nature of this assumption that there's somehow more Wisconsin law that you learn at the University of Wisconsin-Madison or Marquette than you would learn at Notre Dame or the University of Chicago or Oklahoma or anywhere else you went.
There is.
Should we really give this fiction when two-thirds, practically 60% of the people getting into the bar in Wisconsin are coming in on a diploma privilege?
I believe that you should. I don't believe that because we provide the alternative of admission on the bar exam for new lawyers, a burden that is so limited in that practically every other state requires it.
It just doesn't make any sense.
And you wouldn't say that if we were talking about the purchase of widgets. If you said, well, you can purchase widgets manufactured in Wisconsin for $100, but you have to pay $500 if the widget were manufactured in Illinois, I mean, that's plainly discriminatory from the point of view of the law student. It's a lot of money to register for the bar, usually people sign up for bar review classes. These are not imaginary expenses.
Lawyers aren't widgets. I mean, it is a function of admission to the court, a branch of the government without whom lawyers...
Suppose there were evidence in this case, and it showed that, in fact, the program in these two Wisconsin law schools is identical so far as coverage of Wisconsin substantive or procedural law is concerned with that of Oklahoma or University of Chicago or Notre Dame or Virginia or Fordham or what have you. Would you say it still was that your rule was still lawful?
I think that there hasn't been that showing. But had there been that showing...
Obviously there hasn't been that. I'm asking you a hypothetical question.
And I believe that the court could decide that it chose to certify students from that law school if it so chose.
Are they allowed, though, to say, we are certifying only the University of Wisconsin at Madison and Marquette because we want to favor in-state law schools? Suppose they just said that in so many words. Can they do that?
I believe that they could. I don't, because, and for this reason, because I think that it's offering a carrot to those students to take, or to graduate according to the curriculum that the court wants to be involved in, and to allow the court an involvement in legal education that it has decided that it would like to have by virtue of offering this small
carrot. Is that the best you can offer, an involvement in a curriculum that's the same as everybody else's curriculum?
It is an opportunity for the court to involve itself in the education of law students in the state without overly burdening interstate commerce or allowing others to come in.
Ms. Lass, several times in your remarks today you've said, well, it hasn't been shown. And you also made the point that this case is here on judgment on the pleadings. Hasn't your discussion with the court really pointed up the fact that this isn't a case that ought to be decided on the pleadings?
I don't think
so.
That
this really ought to go back and have a record developed?
I don't think that it should. I think that because the burden on interstate commerce is so incidental that under Pike balancing, the benefit to the Wisconsin Supreme Court outweighs the minor burden on students coming in too.
But without evidence, we don't have a balance.
But you do have the evidence that the burden is incidental. And this court has said...
So if the burden is small, even if it's totally arbitrary, not clear it's so small. I mean, what significant cost to these out-of-state students?
Well, it isn't a cost if you think of it as the Wisconsin students having paid for that cost as part of their tuition. And
I assure you the other students probably paid tuition equal to or greater than whatever the Wisconsin students were paying.
And we understand that different law schools charge different tuition, and we don't make distinctions on taking the bar exam based on who's paid more. Yet every state requires that a student have graduated from law school.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Lattis. Mr. Wiesmuller, do you have anything further? How much time?
Thank you. I I just want to take a moment because I want to get back to Judge Wood's question, because as I was sitting at the table, it occurred to me. The standing issue, I believe, was discussed in Camp's Newfound Otana, the Supreme Court case 520 U.S. at 564. I apologize, I didn't have the case at the table. But in that case, I believe the Supreme Court said that the camps in that case had standing. The issue was the town regulation or the town tax imposed taxed camps that catered to out-of-state campers. The Supreme Court said that the camps obviously had standing because they had the tax, but also that the campers would have standing because the tax was passed on to them as higher fees. So I think it is clear, even though there isn't a clear-cut case on point that I can think of, I think it is clear that the standing has been established, at least in that what might be dicta, but it is established in that case. I think that hopefully clarifies that issue. And I'll say this, just based on the argument that Wisconsin law might be necessary to practice in Wisconsin, if it's just a matter of knowing unique Wisconsin law, all the Wisconsin Supreme Court would have to do to make this non-discriminatory is get rid of the bar exam and require out-of-state law school graduates to take a course in unique Wisconsin law and satisfactorily complete that class. If that's the issue, I think that that would be a non-discriminatory way of dealing with it. Obviously, it doesn't require that you have to go to law school in the state of Wisconsin in order to understand Wisconsin law. As to the issue before the court, I think that there is facial discrimination here that the court can rule on based on the pleadings and based on the regulation before it. This regulation basically gives a benefit to graduates of the law schools in the state of Wisconsin. They've got no chance of failing their legal competency requirement. Their application fee is only $210.
But Mr. Weissmuller, let me just break in here, because my problem with just looking at the face of it is, if, contrary to what actually my own expectation is, if it turned out, for example, that at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and Marquette, every first-year law professor was told, yes, you're using the regular casebook, but when you're teaching the UCC, be sure to emphasize Wisconsin cases, and be sure to emphasize that the background Wisconsin contract rules for other contracts not governed by the UCC are something. And so there was some on-the-ground requirement for content of Wisconsin law. At that point, it seems to me that there might be a rational distinction that the state was drawing between graduates of schools that had that. And you might have a more difficult question. Suppose some other school, suppose Northern Illinois University in DeKalb, which is very close to Wisconsin, which may send people, said, well, we're willing to do that in our curriculum too. At that point, you'd have a different case. But it seems to me, just looking at the face of Rule 40.03 doesn't quite get us to the point where we are confident this is irrational.
Well, I agree with you that if that is the case, there would be a defense to the discrimination.
And it would require evidence, wouldn't it?
It would.
How did your affidavits get in, by the way? I mean, if this was really on the pleadings.
Basically during the briefing process on the motion for summary judgment and the motion to dismiss, they alleged without any basis that the Wisconsin law schools were teaching Wisconsin law, and that Wisconsin law schools or that you had to have a knowledge of Wisconsin law in order to be admitted. So I took the initiative to try to come up with some evidence to rebut that, because frankly I didn't feel that it was true, and secondly I didn't feel that they had any evidence that they just alleged it.
So this was in conjunction with your motion for summary judgment in your favor?
Yes.
Of course, that gets denied.
It was filed with the reply on the motion for summary judgment.
Okay. But it was really you seeking relief, not them seeking to bar you from relief. Because that's what went off in the pleadings?
Basically, I moved for summary judgment They moved to dismiss along with their reply to my motion for summary judgment.
Okay.
And then I filed a joint reply on the summary judgment and response on the dismissal.
Okay.
And at that time, that's when I filed the affidavit. What I think the court could do is rule that this is facially discriminatory and remand for the issue of whether there's a defense. I think that on the pleadings and the record before it, the court certainly could do that. I can tell you that the word Wisconsin or Wisconsin law doesn't appear anywhere in the curriculum requirements. Under those circumstances, it appears to be facially discriminatory. If there's an actual defense, in fact, that could be an issue at the trial court at this point. But I think it's clear that the court has to reverse on the facial discrimination issue, only because if this gets remanded with, we just need more. I think the law of the case at this point is incorrect. I think that the district court needs some guidance as to what the mandate before it is. If it's just a simple remand without instructions for more evidence, I think that would be problematic.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Leitz-Mueller and Ms. Lattice.